by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going on this week. President Trump walked away from the conference out there in Vietnam with Chairman Kim. It just didn't go too well. I think Kim and they were trying to play too many, well, we're going to give you this later, you know, but we want all the problems of the sanctions lifted right now. But we'll do a little bit here if you give us the big sanction lift off. So it didn't work out. And Trump is really becoming, it looks like to me, becoming to be more of a statesman versus the Trump president. You know what I mean? But here is a short interview that Sean Hannity had with President Trump that's very, very good, and it's very measured, and it was just an excellent thing to listen to. So listen to that now.
All right, as we can continue our coverage live, we're in Vietnam, where earlier today the president wrapped up his summit, his second summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. Following the summit, we exclusively had the opportunity to speak with the president before he departed Vietnam. Here's part one of that interview. Mr. President, great to see you.
Thank you very much.
Summit number two, when I heard Kim Jong-un say, you know, was asked the question, are you ready to denuclearize? His answer was, I wouldn't be here. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. And then he goes on, and you said that might be the best answer you've ever heard.
Well, and we're working towards something, but we didn't sign anything today. It didn't quite work out. I would say that I wasn't satisfied, and perhaps he wasn't satisfied. Good relationship, but I decided that this wasn't the right time to sign something. So we'll see what happens over a period of time.
It's funny. It came up on the radio show. We've known each other well over two decades.
Yeah.
The art of the deal. One of the key components in the book is you say you always got to be able to walk up to the last second.
Yeah. You always
Reagan, Reykjavik.
Well, whether it's Reagan, whether it's anybody, I mean, you have to be prepared to walk. And this just wouldn't have been good for our country. And frankly, he can look at it the same way. Maybe he can look at it the same way. But we get along really well. He's a different kind of a guy. And I just said, look, this isn't going to be working. So I have a feeling something down the line will happen, and it'll happen. It'll be good. But
and
this
that
just
was your
wasn't
choice.
Good.
You said this isn't
well,
the deal.
Well, let's call it both. Let's call it both. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say it was my choice. It was something that he wanted to do, and I didn't want to do it. And I just don't think it would have been good, maybe for either of us. But we'll get something worked out eventually.
Can you give us any insight into where maybe the sticking point was?
Well, they wanted to denuke certain areas. And I wanted everything. And the sanctions are there, and I didn't want to give up the sanctions unless we had a real program. Mm-hmm. And they're not ready for that, and I understand that fully. I really do. I mean, they spent a lot of time building it, and that doesn't mean the world has to be happy. But I wanted them to denuke, and they wouldn't do the full. They wanted to do some. And I guess a lot of people would have said that's a great start, but I just didn't feel it was right.
Let me ask you about last night. You said he said something at dinner, and I won't say it. I'll let him say it. Can you bring us into that dinner?
Well, no. I just think he's first of all he's a character.
He's laughing a lot.
And he's a real personality, and he's very smart. He's sharp as you can be, and he's a real leader. And he's pretty mercurial. I don't say that necessarily in a bad way, but he's a pretty mercurial guy. But he was talking to the press a little bit. And, you know, he's not big into talking to the press, but the press came in.
Look, bottom line, I think he wants to get something done, but this wasn't the right time. And Vietnam, Hanoi, where we are right now, they have treated us so fantastically, so good. They've done such a great job. Mm-hmm. They're very proud of the job they've done, and they've really treated us. I mean, it's been an incredible 2.5 days.
You kept saying, and managing expectations, you said, I'm in no rush. No. I want the right deal. And the right deal for you is complete denuclearization that is verified and on-site inspections on demand.
It's a much tougher deal to make. Maybe it won't get made, but that's the deal that we should have. And you can't give up everything if you don't get that. Now, we could have done large portions, but you're not getting that. So we'll see what happens. Again, the relationship is very good. He likes me. I like him. Some people say, oh, you shouldn't like him. I said, why shouldn't I like him? I like him. Get along great. We'll see what happens.
Let me ask you about, let's go back to Singapore, where I had an opportunity to see you there.
Right.
And hostages were released.
Right.
Remains have come home.
Right.
And the interesting and most profound part of it was that no rockets have been fired over Japan.
That's
Guam's
right.
Not threatened.
That's right.
And the continental United States was being threatened. Progress in that area?
A lot of progress, and it's a lot of progress not necessarily on paper, although we actually signed a very good agreement. It said no denuclearization. You know, we're going to have that. We are going to have a complete denuke. I call it denuking, but it's denuclearization. And it was a document that was signed, and it was a very good document. The fact is that he also said he's not going to do testing, and he said that recently. And he said it again to me just a little while ago. He doesn't want to do testing. He's not going to do that. That's a big thing. No rockets, no anything. And I believe, you know, when he tells me that, I will take him at his word. But we'll see how it all goes. I think we had a very good 2 days, but I just don't think maybe either of us were ready.
You begin to see that Trump is speaking with a different type of approach. It's more measured. It's, well, we just had to walk away because it would not be fair, you know, agreement for this country and so forth. Now, the next thing coming up is Tucker Carlson, and he's talking about these strange attacks. They have the form of we are God, God is on our side, and the other side, the Trump side, the Republican side, are a bunch of Nazis. So listen to this. This is very, very dangerous speech. So very, listen closer to this.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Here's a quick civics lesson. What's politics? Well, politics is a system that allows people who violently disagree with each other to reach compromise without shedding blood. It's worked well for a long time in this country. But when one side decides it is no longer willing to compromise, that system breaks down. Without compromise, you no longer have politics. Instead, you have an especially fanatical form of religious belief. ISIS, for example, is not a political organization. Its leaders reject accommodation of any kind. Its leaders assume that everything they do has the approval of a higher power. They are good people. They know that. They know their beliefs are not simply correct. They're the only possible beliefs. Anyone who disagrees with them is, by definition, immoral. So a system like that does not allow for the possibility that good people might be mistaken once in a while or reach different conclusions sincerely. People with different opinions are, again, by definition, bad people. In fact, they may not even be people at all. They might be subhuman. They must be converted to the faith or crushed and eliminated. This is not an American way of looking at the world, and yet suddenly it's everywhere, and unfortunately, it now defines parts of the modern Democratic Party. Joe Biden didn't know this. Biden has been in Democratic politics all of his life, but he's taken the last couple of years off. He's been flying around the world getting rich by giving high-priced speeches. By the time Biden decided he wanted to run for president yet again, his party had changed completely, but nobody told him. So he made the mistake just the other day of saying this about Mike Pence.
The fact of the matter is, was followed on by a guy who's a decent guy, our vice president, who stood before this group of allies and leaders and said, I'm here on behalf of President Trump. And there was dead silence. Dead silence.
He's a decent guy, Biden said of Pence. That's an old-fashioned way to talk. That's how people in Washington, political Washington, used to talk about each other. it was one way that they reminded themselves that politics may be important, but it's not everything. Every political opponent is also, on some level anyway, a human being and a fellow American. Our common humanity is stronger than our political differences. That was the assumption that they had and have had, at least since the Civil War. And by the way, it has to be the assumption that all of us have if we're going to live together in the same country. Cynthia Nixon disagrees with this. Nixon is a former actor. She's now a political extremist. She spends a lot of time on Twitter yelling at people. When she saw what Biden said about Pence, she was enraged. Cynthia Nixon disagrees with Mike Pence's views on gay rights questions. Therefore, she knows that Pence cannot be a decent person. It's just not possible. She told Joe Biden this on Twitter. Joe Biden had no choice but to agree with her. "You're right, Cynthia," Biden wrote back. "There is nothing decent about being anti-LGBTQ rights, and that includes the vice president." People used to say that Joe Biden was a decent guy, too. But in the modern Democratic Party, there are no decent guys anymore. There are only people who are with the program and apostates who deviate from it. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard suddenly is in the latter category. How did that happen? By any sane measure, Gabbard is a staunch progressive. But she does hold heterodox opinions on foreign policy. Instead of agreeing with Bill Kristol's foreign policy, she still believes what many progressives used to believe. She wants to keep the U.S. out of pointless foreign conflicts and instead focus on domestic concerns. And for having that opinion, she's almost been expelled from her own party. Watch. "They've dismissed you as sucking up to this dictator. You're a bad person," is basically what they're saying. Has anybody actually debated you on the points that you're making?
No. No. Constantly I see, again, people from both parties instead resorting to name-calling or superficial attacks because they refuse to engage on the substance of this argument about why they continue to push for and try to wage these regime change wars, ignoring the disastrous consequences on the people in those countries and the American people.
So that's suddenly a very controversial thing to say in the modern Democratic Party, a place where there is no room for dissent anywhere on any issue. On Wednesday, for example, a handful of Democrats joined with Republicans to add an amendment to a universal background checks bill in the House. That amendment would require reporting a gun buyer to ICE if that buyer is an illegal alien, a group that is not allowed to buy guns in the United States. In a closed-door meeting after the vote, the Democrats who joined with Republicans on that were reportedly denounced by party leadership for their racism. The party's new ideological enforcer, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, warned that Democrats who helped Republicans in any way would go on a, quote, list and would have primary challenges next time they ran. So that's what extremism looks like. The enemy is 100% wrong, and we are 100% right, always. They are going to hell, and we're saved.
What is happening here is a sin against God. I believe that. Jesus said, "Suffer the little children unto me." He did not say, "Let the children suffer."
A time in which we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. Thank God there wasn't a wall that stopped him from seeking refuge in Egypt. Thank God that wall wasn't there. And thank God there wasn't an administration like this.
And while we're doing the Lord's work by ministering to the needs of God's creation, they are ignoring those needs, which is to dishonor the God who made them.
Mm-hmm. We're doing God's will. We're on God's side. God loves us. God does not love the other side. They're sinners. They're going against God's will. And in fact, you know what? They could be Nazis.
This is the United States of United States of America. Isn't Nazi Germany?
Bottom line, Donald Trump increasingly looks like Hitler and Nazi Germany.
Much like Hitler took over the Nazi Party, Trump has taken over the Republican Party.
If you vote for Trump, then you, the voter, you, not Donald Trump, are standing at the border like Nazis, go you here, you here.
They are the tactics that have been used through history by the worst purveyors of pure evil, including slave traders, including Nazis, including terrorists.
So what you're looking at, that's not politics, it's a cult. Nuance is the enemy. Accommodation is a sin. Ask too many questions or think too many independent thoughts and you will be denounced. You'll wind up on Commissar Ocasio-Cortez's list. We reject this completely. It's totalitarian. It's also stupid and boring. It's a replacement for thought. It's, by the way, destroying the country as well. We will always welcome people we disagree with onto the show. We assume they are decent people. And by the way, mostly they are decent people. We'll do our best to find common ground with them and anyone else whenever we can, because why wouldn't we? And that's why you'll often see sincere leftists on this show treated with respect. Tulsi Gabbard, Glenn Greenwald, Ro Khanna, Michael Tracy, many others. We disagree with these people on a lot of things, but not on everything. And that's the point. But most important of all, they are Americans just like us. And that matters most. We need to remember that. David Burstein is co-founder of Run for America. He joins us. David, thanks a lot for coming on. So I understand that Biden wants to appeal to the base and the base is mad at Trump. I get it. But since he's an adult over 70 and he's been in this a long time, wouldn't this be a perfect moment for him to say, wait a second. Now, I know Mike Pence. I disagree with him on gay rights and probably a thousand other things, but he's a decent man. And you have to be able to allow that your opponent's a decent man or else we just have war. Why didn't he say that?
Well, I think he's recognizing what the Democratic base is at the moment, right? And I think that's a big problem for him and his desire to run for president in this political climate.
I agree with you.
Right. I think there's also a blurring, as you just pointed out, when it comes to issues that have to do with, for instance, LGBT rights. I think there's a different set of questions that people are looking at. People do feel, and Mike Pence's positions do suggest to many people that we should be treating people, indecently in other people's eyes.
But that
should not be a case for saying that Mike Pence is a terrible person,
even if
he's being indecent to other people.
Well, look, there are a lot of opinions that I think are indecent that are policy of the Democratic Party. I mean, I could name a lot of them, beginning with abortion. And I feel that as strongly as any LGBTQ activist feels about his set of issues. But I also believe, and I think I am required to believe, that people who disagree with me can be really good people. They just reach a different set of conclusions. The Democratic base does not believe that. That's a totalitarian belief. It's a threat to the country, and it's a recipe for civil war. So why doesn't some adult come in and say, settle down, AOC. Other people are still people, even if you disagree with them. No one's brave enough to do that.
Well, look, I will say that I don't think people should be engaged in this, but I will say that I think people feel emboldened by their constituencies. AOC is an example of someone who ran not on a position of compromise. She did not run for office saying, we should compromise people, we should work along. Joe Biden is trying to run in that vein, right? He got in trouble a couple weeks ago for saying something about how a Republican, he liked a Republican, Fred Upton in Michigan, and people criticized him for that because it cost that person an election and a swing seat. So, the reality is she is saying, I am for this. I am going to be radical. I believe the problems of our time require radical solutions, and I'm not interested in what other people.
That's what
her constituents. You could easily say that's what her constituents voted for.
Well, I mean, 20% of her district even voted.
Absolutely,
make a fair point, and I agree with that. That's who she is.
Right.
What I'm saying is that's poison. It's super dangerous. She's an influential person. Some of her policy ideas are kind of interesting. We should debate them. But if we begin with the assumption that anyone who disagrees about anything is not fully human, then why don't we, or is indecent or is immoral? If we start framing everything as a moral question, then why don't we wind up shooting each other? Sincerely.
Well, I think to be fair that I wouldn't say that any Democrat in office thinks Republicans are immoral on every single issue. There are a number of issues you played in that clip reel in which those things have come up. And it's not coincidental that some of those issues are issues about children at the border. They're questions about LGBT, rights.
Okay, whatever. Spare me. I mean, there are lots of issues that I feel that way about, that there are moral issues. I get that.
But having a view on moral issues is not saying that people are indecent
about is not salvation. Political parties can't keep you from going to hell, and they can't bring you to salvation. They can only pass laws and form policies.
I think some of those people in that clip should be reminded of that.
That's my point exactly. That this is not a religion, and if we start pretending that it is, we abet extremism, and we're going to actually wind up reaping the whirlwind from that kind of crap. But when our leaders say, the other side is immoral. Really? They're Nazis? What do you do to Nazis?
Tucker, let's also be honest about how Republicans have been on this issue. Would you really say that you think Republicans have not used some of the same language on the part of Democrats
yes,
over the past
have.
Several decades?
Yes, some of them have. And I hate that crap. But the leaders of the Republican Party have never done that. The people like the guys, you know, Ronald Reagan never said our opponents are evil.
Yeah, well, that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. By the way, you make a fair point. If AOC is obviously a bit of a sideshow, though she's gaining power, Nancy Pelosi should not be talking that way.
You played a clip of there. Generally speaking, that's not her demeanor. It is reflective of a new generation of people.
Yeah,
because you see Biden, you see people like.
No, I get it. They're zealots, and the revolution always eats itself. I'll give you the last word.
The political moment in this country has changed. The rhetoric has heated up, and it's very, very important to these people that they stand with their constituents and what those people believe.
It's scary, I think. David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck in the revolution.
It used to be, back when Peikoff wrote Ominous Parallels, he wrote a very, very good book on the leftist, the liberal left in America, resembling much like some of the groups that were a prelude to the Nazi regime in Nazi Germany. Now, it appears that the left is taking up the attack on the right and beginning to call them Nazis and so forth, and that God is on the left side. And let me tell you where some of this is coming from, is that you had liberation theology that got started by Gutierrez, was the founder, one of the founders, who's teaching now as a professor at Notre Dame of liberation theology. Liberation theology states briefly and very concise and short that Jesus was not for individual type of approaches to making the world better, but he was a collective socialist, even a communist, and didn't believe in private ownership of land or anything. So they construed him and taken him from preaching, I think, individual responsibility and individual freedoms to much more characterizing him as a collective socialist left or on the communist left. And so as a result, you're seeing a tremendous rise up from the left of this attack, saying that they are the ones of God, or they are the noble, you could say, attackers against this evil force called Trump, that he is racist and he's biased and he's this evil capitalist. And they are actually being manipulated by the biggest money in the world. So the ultra-capitalists have a controlled left that now is attacking certain elements within the right that got onto the ultra-capitalist control of the money system. And that's really what this thing is about. And it's very, very diabolical and very, very evil. And it knows no ends. I mean, okay, coming up next, we're going to get into a short clip about MS-13 of declaring that they're going to go after off-duty policemen. Now, this MS-13 started in crack, distributing crack in the central L.A. area. And some would say, Webb wrote about it at the Mercury, that the CIA was behind this crack epidemic that got started. Then many of those young people that were distributing crack were deported back to El Salvador. Now, in El Salvador, they were young, and they didn't speak Spanish. They grouped together in El Salvador and formed MS-13, and then they've come back over several decades now into America, and they were a very, very vicious group. And the Democrats are not on to this, and they're not supporting ICE and these other organizations that have been going after the MS-13. But here we have coming up next is a very, very good insight into the MS-13 epidemic. So here we go now. Listen to this.
MS-13 isn't real. It's a figment of your bigoted imagination. The left has told you that 1,000 times. And yet somehow this phantom imaginary group is now, thanks to our porous immigration system, the country's deadliest gang. The New York Police Department is now warning its officers that they could be plotting, they could be the subject of assassination attempts, even if they're off duty by MS-13. Trace Gallagher has more on this story. Trace?
And Tucker, for anyone who's covered MS-13, you know it's all about street credibility or street cred, a way of rising in the ranks by targeting the gang's worst enemies or biggest threats. In this case, it's New York City police officers who live on Long Island. NYPD has now issued an officer safety alert, an internal bulletin saying that MS-13 gang members are planning on carrying out attacks on off-duty police officers near their homes. In fact, the truly frightening part for officers and their families is that the alert reportedly states that gang members are conducting reconnaissance of police officers' private homes. A former FBI agent told CBS 2 New York, quote, they are going above and beyond what any other gang does, and the scary part is that we already know that they legitimately carry out threats and are extremely violent. The warning goes on to advise police officers who live on Long Island to take extra precaution and change up their routines whenever possible. The gang's reign of terror is well documented by a series of brutal and bloody attacks in Queens, Nassau, and Suffolk counties in New York. And authorities note the gang is notorious for murder, drugs, child prostitution, and racketeering. MS-13 is made up mostly of Salvadoran illegal immigrants. The gang started in Los Angeles and has now spread to most major American cities. In recent years, the gang has spread like wildfire across Long Island. In fact, their tactics and techniques are so brutal that MS-13 members are often recruited as enforcers for major Mexican drug cartels. Tucker.
Unbelievable. Trace Gallagher, thanks very much. Well, murderous gang members are not the only problem here in New York City. There is rampant corruption, too. Here's one shocking example. The mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio's wife, her name is Charlene McCrae, oversees a massive mental health project. It's called Thrive NYC. Yet somehow Thrive NYC failed to properly keep track of $850 million in funds. They don't know where the money is. Seth Barron is an associate editor at City Journal, pays close attention to New York City for us, and joins us tonight. Seth, $850 million, what does it mean they can't account for it?
Well, a billion here, a billion there, soon you've got, you know, some real money. Look, this is a $250 million dollar-a-year program, and it was ill-conceived from the beginning. Thrive NYC is a mental wellness program. Charlene McCrae's pet project is to get everyone into therapy, get everybody who's sad or lonely or a little anxious to get them treatment. So she devised this program. It got hundreds of millions, close to $1 billion in funding, and it's, you know, It trains people in how to observe your neighbors and see if they're sad or not, and teaches you to engage with them in conversation. There's a lot of advertising. They set up a phone bank where you can call if you're feeling sad.
But I'm confused. If I'm a cashier at Wendy's and I can't account at the end of the night for $170, I could be brought up on theft charges. So where, I mean, this sounds like theft to me. If they can't account for $850 million, why is no one in jail?
New York City outsources a lot of its social services to a whole network of community-based nonprofits. Oh. And these are organizations that offer the mayor political support and basically do whatever it is that he... They come and support.
It's a patronage system.
It's a patronage system. So these groups, you know, likely were paid millions of dollars.
So they've got to be shutting down the program, right?
Oh, no, they're not shutting it down. They're expanding it. They're going to get 250 this year, maybe 300.
They're expanding it.
Yeah.
So there's really no doubt. So not only dumb, corrupt, presiding over the destruction of New York City, is there a worse mayor in the history of the city?
Mayor de Blasio has been very lucky. He's had a great run with the economy and tax revenues flowing in. So he's probably the luckiest mayor in New York City. He's never had to budget.
I guess that's all that matters. I hope someone looks into this. No one ever will. Seth, thank you very much. Seth Barron. A Maryland woman was trying to make a point about segregation when she created a whites-only yoga club. Now she's getting vilified. People are claiming that she's for the thing that she was against. Of course, she joins us next. Maryland resident Pat Brown sparked a wave of outrage recently when she created a, quote, white women yoga group on the website Meetup. The group, she said, was, quote, to allow space for white women to gather in the name of yoga, surrounded by the supportive community of white people, white yoga instructors, and all-around safe white spaces. Now, to be totally crystal clear, Pat Brown is against racial segregation for any group. The group she put online was completely fake. She was making an important and too seldom made point. Segregation is coming back to this country, horrifyingly, in the guise of racial safe spaces. It's a point her critics seem determined to miss and misrepresent, of course, because they're dishonest. Pat Brown joins us tonight to speak directly. Pat, thanks very much for coming on. So I just want to be clear for the third time. You are opposed to the growing racial segregation in this country, correct?
Absolutely. You know, I grew up in the time of Martin Luther King saying he had a dream that he wanted equality and he wanted everyone to be together. He wanted his children to be judged by their character and not their color. He wanted black children and white children to hold hands and be brothers and sisters. And it was going in that direction as I grew older. Yeah. And then we had the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which told people you cannot have a business. You cannot serve the public and put out a sign that says one race only. In that case, in those days, white only. And then things were getting better. And in 1979, I married a black man. I never thought twice about it. And then I had children. I have two biracial children, and I have one black child who was adopted. And we went on with our lives. Was there problems along the way? Of course you run into that as time went on. My husband did file an EEOC lawsuit against the company who did discriminate against him. He eventually got the job with the company and worked for them for the next 20 years. There were little incidents here and there, but I raised my children to love everybody, to respect everybody, and to judge them by their character.
Yes.
Yeah, and things were getting, I was so relieved as my kids grew older because I said, you know, they're going to do okay in life. And they have done all right in life. But then, over the last decade, I've noticed things turning around, where we're now seeing things through a racial lens, where groups at this point, whites in time, are being called oppressors. And if you're not a white, you're a marginalized person. And it has just gotten so out of hand. So, and I have a granddaughter now, who I call a Ponek, a person of not enough color, and she's going to be running into these kinds of things because now she's too white and not black enough. So, I've just seen this over time. Well, Meetup came along, and they kept sending me advertisements saying, you could join this group, you can join that group. And I'm going, but these are all black-only groups, or people of color-only groups, or African-American groups. And then I found out there were hundreds of these on the Internet across our country. And this is a direct violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 because Meetup is a multi-million-dollar business. They made, I think, what, $14 million last year, $50 million? And they rent storefronts, essentially, in their Internet building. They rent these storefronts, Meetup groups. People pay for them. Yes, and these, and in turn, if you have a Meetup group, you can charge membership fees like a gym. You can charge for special events like a dance club. You can charge for lessons like salsa lessons.
Of course. Yes. But they're practicing segregation.
They have hung out the sign that wasn't ever supposed to be hung out. If you're advertising to the general public and Meetup not only permits it, they actually told me it is absolutely permitted. You can't say who you won't let in,
exactly.
But you can say who you will let in. Like, again, you can say blacks only or whites
only. So, I mean, unfortunately, we're out of time, but I just want to be totally clear. You are making a statement, and your life itself has been a statement, against segregation.
Absolutely.
And for that, you were attacked as some sort of bigot. And I want that to stand as a testament to the insanity that we're living in.
That's true, but the most important thing is this is against the law, and we do not want to go back to segregation and separation.
Right.
And I'm going to fight this and take this to court against me.
Well,
I hope that you will.
And I strongly hope you will come back and give us an update. Pat Brown, thanks very much for that.
Okay, thanks,
Good to see you.
So here we have MS-13 going after off-duty policemen. And followed by that was the $650 million that de Blasio and his wife had control over, his wife in particular, on multiple mental health programs. And this money we find out now was distributed to multiple organizations. So they took $600 billion and distributed it out as payola for their Democratic friends under the guise of some mental health, great work. You know what I mean? And so what that's going to be is a tremendous payoff, you know, political payoffs. And that's basically what occurred there. It's endless. You know what I mean? And we just can't continue doing this. The state of affairs of America. Okay, now we're calling Jesus a socialist communist. We're saying that the Democrats are calling Republicans Nazis, and that the Democrats are saying that God is on their side only, and that God is not on. They're sounding almost like religious fundamentalists, some of these Democrats. Then we've got Cortez in there, okay? And she's an example of the ultra-capitalist control of the left. They're controlling the left and bringing about a world communist movement so that they can better and more easily control the masses through benefits and entitlement programs. And then also, they're going to use a very strong centralized government to start liquidating or reducing the world population down to something that they believe that is more amenable. That's why this green program that Cortez has, she's been educated. You have to understand that what is going on now, there was just an announcement just recently from Washington State. A governor says that he's going to jump in, the governor out there, and he's going to base his run, you know, his campaign on environment stuff and green stuff, see. And what's happened in America is you had a tremendous education program that started in the elementary schools and middle schools and junior highs, if they were there, or into the high schools, into the college, of indoctrinating. And that's what it was, indoctrinating our children and through our education systems, that you had to do something about global warming. And global warming was created by men. And because it was created by men, then it's going to be the downfall of America and the world. And they built it up into the minds of all of these people. And Cortez is probably just an ideal example of the level of danger that she thinks that this global warming or global change is incurring. See, so she's rabid in her, if you watch her. And also, she's very intimidating. See, one thing about Cortez is that the other day they had a meeting, and she goes in there and she causes negative dispersions or whatever negative statements about people that actually went and voted, that were Democrats, voted for a bill that would deny illegal aliens guns, the purchases. Now, I think, to me, if there's any gun control law, that's the one that I would be behind, because if you're an illegal alien in this country, I don't think you should have the right to buy a gun, because first off, you're an illegal alien. That's, you're a violator right there. And then on top of that, they're going to encourage people to go in and buy guns. No, I don't think so. I just don't think that we can get in there, and stepping it up to that level makes a very, very dangerous proposition. So she goes into this closed door Democratic meeting, and she says those that voted for that bill that would deny are going to be put on a list, and they're going to meet adversaries in their primaries. What, you talk about intimidation. If she talks about how bad the existing system is, then she's the new intimidator, the new socialist communist, intimidator. And intimidators are dictators. So she is becoming a dictator about trying to dictate to these other fellow representatives the way that they should vote. And if they don't go along with her and her view and her, you know, vote and her opinion, and well, then they're going to be outed. But she's going to have a backfire on this. There's going to be a comeback on this. You can see it coming. These representatives up there, they don't vote. Nobody is all black and all white as far as their vote goes. No one up there in Congress votes all the time to the left or all the time to the right. There are a few people that are consistently extremist on both sides. But depending on the the issues, the demographics vary so much that they're voting left and right on different issues. So it's not all left and it's not all right all the time. It fluctuates all the time. So she's coming in there with all this political correctness, but it's a political correctness that buoyants and supports the socialist communist movement, which is being funded by the ultra-capitalists that want to bring in that as a control mechanism. And the America that we're leaving behind, if this continues on and more Democrats go after it. Now, Tulsi Gabbard out of Hawaii is not going along with this stuff. And she is running. She threw her hat in the ring for the presidency a while back. But the problem with Tulsi Gabbard is she's too moderate for this extremist element now that's being pushed by Cortez and many of the others. Okay. And it's not going to catch on, I don't think. And I think people like Joe Biden, and I don't like him at all for president, and I'm still in support of Trump. But Joe Biden is not, and those kind of people, and even Pelosi's beginning to see that this Cortez woman is going to cause havoc, and it's going to backfire because the American public is – We live in a mixed economy. Let's face it. How many people out there in America are on some kind of a check? We've got a lot of Social Security recipients. We've got a lot of disability that are below the Social Security retirement age. We've got a lot of military and VA and things like that. We've got a slew of programs that is, I don't even know all the programs, see. In addition to that, we have people like Blasio's wife coming up with a $650 million project, a movement there, a health project in New York State. I mean, in New York City. I mean, actually New York City and the surrounding environs close to that. So where do we end with this giveaway money? The American economy today, it's not a full market, free market, open market, fully, you know, capitalistic system. You've got elements of capitalism, crony capitalism. You have elements of socialism and so forth. But this cartel represents a severe turn way to the left, which is, to me, it's a communist left. Even the ominous parallels place the change would be coming from the left. And there are other writers about fascism, and they've stated in the past that they see it coming out of the left in America now versus the right. What Trump actually represents, and the problem with Trump is he talks too much sometimes. This recent, you know, comment he made about the young man that was turned back and he's tortured brutally, upset his parents, and this is where Trump could best keep his mouth shut, but he doesn't. His ego is always out there. And Trump's ego is just ruinous. And I said way back after he was elected president over 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, I said that Trump's success or failure would rest upon his ability to either control his ego or not. And what I see happening now is that he started out being Trump Incorporated, thinking the American government was like that, and that failed. And now he's becoming slowly a statesman. His joint speech to Congress about the State of the Union address, which came late, was the beginnings that I saw of a statesmanship-like mentality. Now, this recent walk away in Vietnam from Chairman Kim's proposals, I think, was the starting point that he is maturing, see. And that is good because we need to get back to something that makes sense about foreign affairs. Now Kim and that whole North, you know, Korean bunch has been hustling. They hustled Obama. They hustled, you know what I mean, Clinton. They hustled everybody way back, okay? They hustled George W. They just give you nothing and promises, and they keep developing their nuclear arsenal, which they're continuing to do it today. See, they might give you a little crumb on the table, and then they're hiding the other nuclear development plants back in the hills and mountains of North Korea somewhere where it's hard to see them. But our eyes are up there, see. So one important aspect that Trump had that Chairman Kim did not have in these negotiations is that we've got the Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and we've got the a lot of NSA stuff all over. And so we're listening, and we're deciphering, and we're beginning to understand when he violates this or that of the agreement. See, and I think this time Trump got the best advice, was just leave. You know what I mean? But hope with the hope that it may come back in a better way. See what I mean? That we walk away from the table and say, look, we're not going to agree to these things. Chairman Kim, you're just not giving us enough. That's basically the interview that Hannity had with the President Trump, is that President Trump basically said, you know, to Hannity and that to the speaking through Hannity to the American public. And I think that was a very excellent interview that, look, it got to the point where, sure, we could sign some agreement, but it wasn't any good for us. It probably wasn't worth the paper it was written on, because it gave us very, very little, like crumbs on the table. And then Chairman Kim and the North Koreans just continued to develop their nuclear arsenal and so forth. So we're looking at a very conniving North Korean gang up there, and they're not stupid. They're very, very sharp, see. And we're looking at taking someone like Trump, who is a neophyte to foreign affairs. That's where he's really weak. He's beginning to catch on to this now. He's becoming more, like I said, of a statesman. But he was very weak in that area. Now, John Bolton, he's a hawk all the way, see. And another weakness that I saw in President Trump, too, is his choice of some of the top people. They're like bringing back in the CFR members, you know, and bringing them in and setting them up and giving them big salaries and everything else, because they're not really on our side all the time. The Council on Foreign Relations has been decidedly manipulated, you know, by the New World Order. This is where you get into something that Trump is trying to overcome, see. But what I see going on right now is that I was listening to NPR the other day, okay? And, you know, autism, you know, it's been proven by some of the leading, you could say, doctors of counter integrative medicine type people that the shots, the immunizations, the vaccinations and so forth have contributed in some ways to illnesses like autism. And I think there's proof out there. And then all of a sudden you have this NPR programs that they put out there, and they're all hyping pharmaceuticals. And the recent article, one of the programs was that if you send your child, say, to school, unvaccinated, no immunization, so forth, then that child is a danger to the whole class, see, because he doesn't, you know, he's not immunized, see. But, and so they're moving towards a total lockdown on vaccinations of every child. We still have these choices, you could say, because of religious preference and so forth, on not vaccinating and immunizing our children. Well, my stand on it is there are some immunizations and vaccinations that have proven over the years to be effective and probably very good. The problem today, though, is that if you look at a list of what the pharmaceuticals and the AMA and all this others, what they recommend that the young developing children should have, it annihilates the immune system. There's too much. There's too many. And because the pharmaceuticals are pushing for more and more vaccinations, immunization, and drug use. So what do they come up with? They come up with all these psychiatric drugs that make you more ill by taking them than not, see. And there are proven some drugs out there, psychiatric drugs have proven to be effective and very helpful for certain illnesses. So I can't say I'm knocking all of those psychiatric drugs. But you have people like Peter R. Bragan writing Medication Madness And he says sometimes they do more harm than good. See, but you have a continuum. And I was talking and thinking about this today when I was driving around. I was had to run some errands out to north of Austin and try to solve some problems. But we have a country, okay, now that over ever since I'm going to be 75 years of age Monday. And what I've seen in my short 75 years, and I've really started waking up, you could say the last 40 of those years, the last 40 years, what I've been noticing in this thing, this place called America that started out in a wonderful way with principles that eventually did provide civil rights to blacks and so forth that they were denied before, and that was wrong. And I've always been against all that. I'm for freedom and liberty and democracy and Republican protection, Bill of Rights protections for everyone. But anyway, you have since the 50s, it's noticeable in this country that we have a deteriorating system of debasing of this country. This country is becoming more slowly and more quickly, I'd say. It started out in a very slow, incremental way. Now it seems like the people like cartels and others are trying to just destroy the country with their ideas that they think are right, see. Because she's had several decades of conditioning and programming in her through the school system and her contemporaries, see. So she'll go and if somebody stands up and says, no, you know, these pharmaceuticals can be dangerous, well, she's going to be on the other side, see. Or someone says, hey, they're fixing the figures and they're cooking the books on global warming and climate change. Well, she's on the other side. She'll immediately say, oh, that's not right, and you're just a conspiracy nut or something, see. But actually, she's being carefully manipulated into bringing us more and more pharmaceuticals, more and more, you know what I mean, centralized government. And that's what she is. She's a statist. She's for government, for big government. And she's for a big government telling you what you should do. And what if, I mean, they did that in the Soviet Union when they were putting people in, you know, psychiatric wards and feeding them all kinds of drugs if they were anti-government, see. So what we have today is we have an America that has happened and unfolded over the last 40 years that I've seen in detail, a debasement of the America. And it's also moved further and further to the left through our school system. So we have an America that's been conditioned into Marxist communist types of ideas. And then those right now are becoming above, they're coming out from everywhere, see. And they're using all kinds of ideas of why people should have reparations, this, us, and so forth. And it gets to be where when you look at it closely, you're going to see an economic system that cannot support all of the green programs and so forth that Cortez wanted to put on the table and into an act. We can't afford that, you know. The country, I mean, it would take $300,000 worth of you know what I mean, net worth or spending, you know, or taxation per family or per person to do all of this. So we have to get back to what is real, what is realistic, and what is practical. And there's only one thing that solves. It's just like on this self-driving trucks that they're trying to come up with, it's not going to work. I was out on North Interstate between Georgetown and Round Rock today, and it's a very busy thoroughfare now on Saturday afternoon. And if you weren't careful, there would be multiple crashes out there on these self-driving trucks. It won't work. There's the mind with people behind the wheel, carefully watching in front of them. They can weave in and out, change lanes, and move the traffic along faster, more efficiently, and avoid problems, big problems, than some kind of computerized self-driving trucks and cars. See? It's just. But these ideas catch on. Now the next thing that's coming up is you should let your child be who he wants to be. See, that means throwing away the gender type of classification. You're not a boy. You're not a girl. You're a thing. You're a human, right? Well, that's okay being human, but there are natural laws. There are physical laws that we have. There are physical extremities, and sexual types of characteristics that men have and that women have. And the naturally evolving husband and wife, man and woman, having a family, providing the children with not only a masculinity input, but a feminine input also from the mother. There's no substitute for that. This new fangled thing, like do your own thing, be your own person, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. It upsets the whole, you could say, fabric of society, the natural law. It does not conform to the natural law. It's only pushing ideas that have been impregnated through indoctrination of these kinds of ideas into minds. That doesn't mean that it is in conformity with the natural law. When you're born into the world, you come in the world in a natural way through your mom's womb into the world. You are formed inside your mother's womb. You have certain extremities. You have arms and legs and so forth and sexual organs. And women have those different than men. And young boys think different than young girls. So we have to get back to a natural law base. And that's what they did politically in the country. What they did was they took away a natural law that all of our founding fathers were somewhat educated in or aware of. And they took that and threw it away and substituted positive law. See, put stuff on the books and then make people conform to those laws on the books. And today, I saw nothing but just a money hustle in these different court systems and everything else. It's all about the money, money, money. You pay this, you pay that. Somebody's making a fortune. So have the money changers moved, okay, from the temples into the courtrooms and in our judiciary system? Is that where the battle is going on in that area? It's all about money in the judiciary and finding a justice system, they call it. You know, justice systems. It's juice. They're just putting more and more juice out there in the form of profits and just ruining it. Well, I want to thank everybody out there in our listening audience for being supportive over the years. And I hope I didn't go off too much on a tangent today, but I just said some things that were heartfelt. And I really feel I love this country and I love the people in this country. And I love those on the left and I love those on the right. It's just that both the left and the right have been conditioned, propagandized, and programmed. So it's not just the left, it's the right too. So we both have to try to awaken and come out of this mesmerized, you know what I mean, programmed, conditioned state. And in that state, we find ourselves in delusion. And delusion does nothing but continues the chaotic and the confusion and the mess and does not create clarity and our ability to see clearly where we are and who we are. And what we're really all about, this thing about be who you want to be, you know what I mean? That's all fictitious stuff. You have to arise out of all of these figments of people's imaginations that have been impressed on you, and you begin to think more clearly without all this over-education. So we've got in the country a bunch of over-educated idiots running around thinking that these new movements are the solution to the world's problems and to the social problems, and they're not. To forgive yourself and others is a solution, and that, to me, is the spiritual yearning that we should proceed towards. So anyway, forgive yourself and others, and love everybody out there. I want to thank you for listening, and good night. Thank you.